Jesus is putting himself as, in their minds, just only a human being. I mean, they are right. He is a man. Like, they're right on that part. But what they don't believe is that he's also fully God. So they only have half of that equation right. He is a man. That's correct. But he's putting himself in the position of being divine as well. Jesus, over and over again, keeps connecting everything that he's doing with the Father to try to, you know, make the argument against their disbelief that, no, he is from God. He is in a way that no other human being can say that we are from God.
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. So thankful you're tuning in or watching us online this week. This week, we have a great episode for you. Perry Marshall sits down, talks about the second half of John 10, where Jesus is in Solomon's colonnade. It's going to be a great conversation I don't want you to miss. Before we get there, always do me a favor. Get connected and stay connected by going to calvarybible.com. Find out what's happening in your neck of the woods by going there to calvarybible.com. Click your campus. There's so many great things happening here at Calvary. Couple of highlights I just want to mention real quick is we have the winter weekend for middle schoolers coming up. Your middle schooler doesn't want to miss out on that. Also, there is a way retreat for women's ministry. They're going to be the YMCA of Estes. What a great season we are here at Calvary. Like always, though, find more information. Do me a huge favor. Go to calvarybible.com. Long ago, Perry Marshall, John Boyle bought that URL.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Many moons ago, huh?
Yeah, I was just actually talking to him yesterday about the conversation because people thought it was really expensive to buy the domain calvarybible.com.
I just wonder how much you could sell it for right now.
I don't know. So fun. It's amazing how technology changes, and we just, like, even with the intro of AI and all that stuff, it's just the landscape is always changing in technology.
Yeah, it totally is. I know. Yeah. Yeah. So things cool that we can use AI for are just amazing right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really
maybe
is
a little scary too.
Yes, no doubt. But even the weekly now with it here is so easy to get across campuses and the busy days that you hold, the preachers hold at Calvary and sit down for the conversation. It's awesome. Super cool.
It is. It's cool.
I, by the way, I like your hat a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I like yours too.
Yeah.
Mine
You're
is
a man of great style.
Mine's been in the neighborhood swimming pool a few too many times, which is why it's faded, I think.
I think it's just arriving at peak performance right now. It's awesome. I love it. Oh, man, it's good that you're here with us. We are picking up after Christmas, John 10. What a great 2 weeks to stay in John 10, huh?
Yeah, it is such a great chapter. I mean, John is just an amazing gospel account of Jesus's life and ministry. And it is every week, like, there's just so much that is rich theologically, practical for life in many ways. And it really has been a gift, I think, just to the people who are preaching every week too, because, you know, obviously we're doing a deep dive. And hopefully that's something that the rest of the congregation is experiencing too.
Yeah, I think so. It's just a gift because of how we broke out John 10 and just picking up the first half and making sure we're paying attention to that and not rushing past the second half of the conversation. And it's really interesting too that in John 10, it seems to me, am I right that Jesus is in two different places within John 10?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I don't know exactly how to answer it. I did find some commentators who would say that this first part of the chapter that we did 2 weeks ago was still at the Feast of Tabernacles. Mm-hmm. And then this second part that we did last week, because it mentions the Feast of Dedication, would be a different scene change. So that would be the difference on the calendar of a few months. where the Feast of Tabernacles is earlier in the fall, and then you have the Feast of Dedication taking place in what we would consider December. But they're clearly linked by the fact that Jesus is using the same kind of language for himself being the Good Shepherd.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit, even Thomas did, about the Feast of Dedication and sort of what it represented. And it's the revolt of the Maccabeans that the Feast of Dedication is established, right?
Yeah, very tumultuous period of time in Israel's history. And not to get into too many weeds on that, but the temple had been desecrated, and that inspired a group of Jews to band together, kind of like a militia, and to run out these foreign invaders who had come in and taken over the temple, and then to purify it because it had been desecrated. They'd set up a pagan altar on it, and they went through the whole rite of then purifying it. And fascinating story that takes place between the Old and the New Testament. So we don't read about it in scripture, except for places like this, where you just see the reference made to the feast.
Yeah. And you can pick up that story with a simple Google of, like, what is the Feast of Dedication, and also the Maccabean revolt. It's also in the Apocrypha, if I recall the Maccabeans story.
Yeah.
Which is sort
of interesting. Yeah, there are various sources where you can read about it. And of course, plenty of historians have picked up on it.
Yeah. And that's where also the present day, like, Hanukkah festival comes about.
Yeah.
So exactly. Just that if someone's not understanding or confused where it sort of places in the Jewish life, that's where it is these days. I think it's really interesting. I don't know why it's always been sort of curious for me, but I love how in John 10, I've always loved the section where John reminds us it was winter. And I think it was really fitting, even in this season where we're in Gospel of John 10 in the wintertime, and sort of puts you in context a little more. And he's walking through Solomon's colonnade, which, you know, we can talk a little bit about that, because that place, that's sort of a common meeting ground for individuals to do teaching and discussion. In fact, in Acts 3 and Acts 5, Peter and the disciples will be in Solomon's colonnade. It seems like a very sort of important social spot, sort of like Calvary Cafe.
I think it's exactly like Calvary Cafe. They probably had their own Calvary blend, or except, of course, it'd be the Solomon's colonnade blend. But I'm sure it was the same thing, virtually.
You know, I'm not going to tell everyone in the digital world that I'm working in R&D again for another coffee blend, but if I was just looking for a name, Perry, and we might have stumbled upon it.
Colonnade blend?
Solomon's Colonnade.
Nice. Can't wait to taste it. That'll be great.
Yeah, me either. Yeah, it'll be great. Okay, so here's where Jesus is, just so we're catching up to the conversation. And...
stay on track, Jay.
You know, this is why we love the podcast. It's interesting that Jesus has, like, really harsh words, it seems, in his red letters, depending on if you have a red letter Bible, but it does seem like these are pretty harsh words from Jesus. What were your reflections going in sort of to the preach and post preaching through the text?
I just think it's remarkable to see how Jesus addresses people who are struggling to believe. And it is both, like, he has some very pointed words, right? He's very direct. Yeah. But I also see a lot of compassion coming out from him too in this passage, in terms of just how he is willing to implore people to reconsider their disbelief. And asking them to reconsider their skepticism. so that they might believe. And so you see that kind of on both sides, where there is, yeah, this very direct, well, you are not among my sheep. But then at the end of the passage where he's saying, you know, reconsider the fact that I'm doing all of these works, and you have witnessed them, and you're not denying them. So you should also reconsider my words and my claims that I'm making. So calling them to believe.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, especially after the first half of John 10, where he's like talking about sheep and the voice. And he picks it up even in verse 27 here, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And then I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. I think that's just really interesting when it comes to understanding sort of the promises of Jesus if we follow him as well, as much as the criticism that those have of him that day in Solomon's colonnade. It's like the promises are really true for those who follow Jesus today even.
Absolutely, yeah. The security that we have in Christ and in the Father combined, you know, because you just read the first part where Jesus is saying, they're in my hand and no one can snatch them away. But then my Father, who's the greatest of all, right after that, they're in his hand as well. And you just see, I and the Father are one, you know, brings together this image of two hands coming together. And it's like two different hands that walk in so tightly together that there's no breaking them apart. It's the most secure place you could possibly be.
That's really cool. I think that's a really good, important sort of moment of the text itself. What do you think about this in verse 28 when he says, I give them eternal life and they will never perish and no one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given to me is greater than all. I mean, and I and the Father are one. Like the statement in which Jesus is making to the Jewish leaders is really profound.
Yeah, profound and very provocative too, because that's exactly why they won't follow him. They don't want to, you know, that's why they're accusing him of blasphemy, because he's making statements like that. But it seems to be that the oneness that he's speaking of is most directly about what he's talking about right there, where they're one in will, one in purpose, one in their commitment to secure and protect their sheep, so to speak. But also, it puts Jesus in the same category as the Father is in it as he makes this statement. And that's where, you know, the text tells us in the very next verse, they pick up stones to throw at him. So it's definitely a kind of teaching from Jesus that is leading them to believe that he's committing blasphemy because they don't believe who he is, you know. And they say as much. And soon after that, when they say, you, being a man, make yourself God.
Yeah, I think that's really such a crazy statement, because Jesus is going to go to Psalm 82, I believe, and sort of walk them back on even their biblical knowledge and biblical understanding of, it's like John 10, 11, 12. I mean, these are really great confrontations we're starting to have with Jesus and the religious leaders.
Yeah. And John is just loaded with those confrontations, because many of these things that Jesus is saying here in John 10, you know, take on a kind of new feel to them, because he's changed the metaphor of I'm the good shepherd. So things are presented in that language, but he's used really similar statements going back into the earlier chapters, where he's talking about, like, all that the Father gives to me will come to me. And I will not lose any of them. That's language from, I believe it's chapter 6. You know, so he's been down saying those kinds of things before, but he's saying them all over again to reemphasize who he is and to make the point even still further that, yeah, this is who I really am. And, you know, it's not the first time he's faced people who wanted to stone him. That's happened before at the end of chapter 8. So he's definitely confronted those who are opposing him. But I think, again, he's doing it with a spirit of wanting to convince them and persuade them rather than just simply to condemn them.
That's a really important distinguishing marker, I think, Perry, in this conversation. Really important. He says in verse 31, I've shown you many good works from the Father. So even Jesus says, like, hey, you have to look at my works and understand who I am. And for which of them are you going to stone me? And it's not the good works, but because you're a man and you make yourself God. They say this word blasphemy. What does blasphemy mean? For someone who has never been through the biblical text, what is the word blasphemy?
Yeah, in this situation, it's clearly taking on what it says right there in the text, that Jesus is putting himself as, in their minds, just only a human being. I mean, they are right. He is a man. They're right on that part. But what they don't believe is that he's also fully God. So they only have half of that equation right. He is a man, that's correct, but he's putting himself in the position of being divine as well. And that's the part where they're saying they're not accepting. And because of that, they are continuing to think that this is a blasphemous claim, because you're just a mere human being and you're making yourself God. So that's what it means. But Jesus over and over again keeps connecting everything that he's doing with the Father to try to make the argument against their disbelief that no, he is from God. He is in a way that no other human being can say that we are from God. So, and that goes all the way back to the prologue of John, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And that's really just being like replayed over and over again in every chapter of John.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting you mentioned that, because Thomas and I were even talking about this morning is like, you have to read the Gospel of John with the prologue over every page.
Yeah.
This claim of Logos, the claim of Logos is on full display from chapter to chapter to conversation to conversation. And, it's been a few months since we've been there as a church. It's really important for us to remind ourselves. We have to go back to what is John's first claims of who Jesus is and his gospels. And that will be filled in with chapters like John 10 for us. So it seems like they, we can even make the point today, people love the works of Jesus, but don't like the claims that Jesus makes on their lives. What's your sort of pastoral reflection on that, going through John 10 and these religious leaders?
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. I think people do like the works. They don't like the claims. However, I think even when it comes to the works, people have kind of a sanitized version of that. And that's kind of the direction I went in Boulder on Sunday, where I think a lot of people actually get tripped up on the works of Jesus too. Like thinking, come on, did you really heal a blind man by smearing mud on his face?
Right.
Can you really feed 5,000 people with a sack lunch? That kind of thing. So I think people still get tripped up on that, but you're right to say that the claims are also really hard for people to accept. And I think there can be a number of reasons. First of all, you might just have a really hard time accepting what he said he did. And again, that can be like, well, I don't believe in those miracles, so therefore I also don't believe in those claims. And I think that's one of the positions that people have today and probably in any generation. But I would also say that people don't like the implications of Jesus's claims for their lives. Because if it's really true that Jesus is who he said he is, then that has some consequences for me in terms of how I live my life and the kind of autonomy that I really think I have in life and the kind of, self-governing authority that I have in my life and all of that. If Jesus is Lord, then that has all kinds of consequences for how I live.
That's right. And that's, in all of our journeys with Jesus, I think that's the the long journey with him, right? Of trusting the process of him being Lord of our lives, trusting him with his claims of what our lives should look like compared to what we think they should be, and the process of obedience and listening to his voice and surrender and all those. Yeah. And it's just really hard. I can't imagine this first century crowd, these first century religious leaders, looking at this ordinary man who's from Nazareth and trying to put the puzzle pieces together that he's actually the Son of God.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it, like, we can feel like we're disadvantaged because we don't live in the day that Jesus was walking the planet, you know? But if I try to be somewhat honest about it, which I, you know, you have to use your imagination, of course, but if I think about it, if somebody walked into my office, you know, and said, made the kind of claims that Jesus is making, I would be very hesitant to believe. And of course, that there's other reasons for that too, but maybe I should say it this way. If I was back in the day that Jesus walked the planet, if I was in the position that these people are in that we're reading about, then I can appreciate the difficulty that you would have just taking it, the claims that Jesus is making, and automatically accepting them.
Yeah.
Now, you know, right. Hopefully if you saw the works that he's doing, that would be convincing. I think we all have in our minds, oh, the Son of God should be much taller. The Son of God should be more attractive. The Son of, you know, whatever it is. So.
Yeah, that's right. The Son of God should be fill in the blank, powerful, winsome, kind, whatever it is. Those are the claims that we have to challenge and wrestle with. Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the hardest part of this text. And I'm sure you're buckle up, get another sip of tea there, Perry Marshall, because Jesus challenges them in verse 34 of chapter 10, says, is it not written in your law, I said, you are gods? For you and I, the listener who's not familiar with sort of the narrative of the Old Testament, we'd be like, what is he talking about? And it takes a long season of sort of biblical understanding and just reading to understand that he's quoting Psalm, or he's pointing back to Psalm 82 and this very strange sort of Psalm.
Yes, it is.
So, Perry Marshall, what do you think is going on here?
Oh, wow. Thank you for that question, Jeff. Yeah, so good. Well, get another cup of tea and let's just sit down and I'll answer every question for you right now. No, yeah. It's complex. But Psalm 82, I would encourage everybody listening to this, if you have not, go back and read that. And I would be surprised if after reading it, you would feel like, oh, now I get it. It's clear. I don't think that's the case, but it would be helpful. It's short. But you could read through it and get an idea for the entirety of the psalm from start to finish. But essentially, somebody is being rebuked in the psalm. Yeah. And in Hebrew, it's called Elohim. And if you're familiar with biblical Hebrew at all, or just, I shouldn't say biblical, just Hebrew, period. The word Elohim is the word that God, capital G, comes from, but it can also mean, just as in just as valid of a way, lowercase g, gods, and it can also refer to other spiritual beings too. So the question is, who's being referred to in the psalm? And there's a lot of debate about it. And some would say, oh, well, these are clearly spiritual beings lesser than God who are being referred to here. Others would say, no, these are human leaders, leaders of Israel, people with a lot of power and authority who have not acted justly. They're being rebuked in it. But I think in spite of all of the complexity of that, the good news is that the point Jesus is making appears to be pretty simple. And that yep. is that there is kind of this lesser to greater comparison where Jesus seems to be going to that psalm and citing it as a way to point out that, hey, there are others out there who were referred to in that psalm as Elohim, as gods, and whether they're human or whether they're spiritual beings almost doesn't matter as much to just being able to catch the simple point of, if those people were worthy of being labeled that way, then how much more is it worthy to call the one who has been set apart by God and sent into the world the Son of God? If you can call these others that, then surely the one who's been set apart and sent into the world by God is worthy of being called the Son of God. And that's essentially the argument, as the best that I'm able to track it, at least.
No, I think that's so wonderful how you navigate the text, because it has some questions in it. You know, the reality is that Psalm 82, and if you were just going to read it without even thinking about Jesus in it,
yeah.
in the sense of John 10, the language the psalmists use is to emphasize the need for the wicked, who could be rich or poor, to prevent from mistreating the lower social classes that existed in ancient Hebrew time. Those low classes, which are commonly neglected even today in our modern world, right? But in the Near East long ago, who is going to protect them? And the psalmist sort of gets the reader, those who read the Psalms out loud, that God is the only remedy for those protections. And so, like, the psalm itself is just a beautiful psalm of God's sort of overarching shepherdness of even the marginalized and poor and those who can't defend themselves. And then, like you said, Jesus is sort of playing off these, it's not sarcasm, I wouldn't say it would be sarcastic, but it is a challenge for them to sort of play in their own interpretive lens of their reading of the Bible, and how even Jesus uses it, the case for, yeah, I could be the Son of God. Mm-hmm. Even the scriptures say something about God's.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah. Jesus does not back away from the claim that he is sent from God. He never does.
Right.
Or sent from the Father, I should say. He does not back away from that claim, but he only re-emphasizes it over and over again.
Yeah, and don't be fooled by really this modern conversation that I've heard through the years of follow Jesus, like Jesus never knew he was actually God.
Yeah, that is the most bogus kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. It's like, no, he really knew who he was. He hid or veiled himself in ways for people to not understand who he is, or to have their hearts be revealed of their own presuppositions. But he is very clear on actually who he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And yeah. I keep going into chapter 11, you know, this week, and it's the same thing. He's very clear to point out that what he's doing is from the Father.
Yeah, no doubt. So as we, you know, leave the conversation, how would you invite someone to investigate Jesus? How would you know if Jesus is really who he says he is?
Yeah, well, I think there is a supernatural priority when it comes to this, where you see this again repeated in John, and some in John chapter 10 here, where Jesus has sheep. And it's very important to recognize that the way Jesus describes it is that it's from the Father, that the Father has given certain, you know, sheep, and to use the language of John 10, to the Son, to the Good Shepherd. And I think the important thing, there are obviously questions that come out of that we would love to, you know, have clear answers to, and people answer those questions different ways. I think the clear priority, though, well, I just used the word, the clear thing to take away from it is the word priority, that God has a priority in the salvation of anybody, which means that it is a supernatural thing for somebody's eyes to be opened. you know, just like the blind man. For the eyes of somebody who was born blind to be open requires a work of God in our lives. So to recognize that and to be prayerful about the salvation of people around us. But there are other processes that God uses to open the eyes of people who are blind. And this gets more directly to what you're asking, Jay. But, you know, I think there are ways to investigate the claims of Jesus. And probably the thing that is most, I don't know, just accessible or easy for us to find arguments for in terms of all that Jesus did and said is the resurrection itself, which we're of course moving towards. But you can investigate the resurrection and the way that people have over the years explained why we can have confidence to believe that that happened. And then with that in place, if God can actually predict his own, you know, Jesus can predict his death and pull it off and pull off his resurrection, then there's a lot that falls into place from that. And we have the credibility to believe that Jesus is who he said he is. But I would encourage people to just continue, stay with us in John, stay with us through the series, and continue to read, continue to search the scriptures, to pray, and ask God to reveal himself if that's the position that somebody's in. And also it can be really helpful just to be around other people who happen to believe. There are arguments that maybe you haven't thought about and considered that they can give an encouragement to just keep investigating as well. There are lots of resources out there.
Yeah, I think you're right on it, Perry, and super thankful for you pointing us to some of those categories. Thanks so much for your time this week. Thanks for preaching and helping us sort of just understand where Jesus is and what he's doing in John 10. And more importantly, sort of the claims we can take even as we investigate coming up in the Gospel of John. Thanks so much, Perry.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah. Calvary, so thankful that you're always tuning in and listening. May I leave you today with sort of the opening lines of John 1, maybe sort of a meditative, prayerful claim for where you find yourself today and how much we love you here at Calvary and want to point each other to Jesus Christ. John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. May you rest upon those promises today. May we continue to be faithful at pointing each other towards Jesus, and we look forward to seeing you very soon. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week.